And then there were two, the Wahoos and the Red Raiders. Who'd have thunk it? What do you think this national championship game will be like? We'll share our opinion. We'll go live to Minneapolis. LSU football spring game. It's a glorified scrimmage, but two newcomers shone above all the others. LSU baseball and the Raging Cajuns win 2 out of 3. We'll recap that. Plus, LSU gets a new commitment, and it's Masters Week. Today, Monday, April 8th, 2019.
Jerome slaps the basketball, looking, peering, finds Guy in the left corner for three, and the win! Off the rim, no good! And the Tigers claw back, but wait! Was there a foul? Was there a foul in the corner? The clock is at zeros, but Auburn fouled the shooter!
Francis working on the right side against Ward. 9 on the shot clock. Mooney launching a 3 left wing.
Got it again! Matt Mooney with his arms outstretched. Are you not entertained? Matt Mooney with another deep 3, and it's 45-33 Texas Tech and a timeout. Michigan State.
Baseline entry to come from D.D. Richards, 82-81 Baylor. Richards near corner pass, tipped by Turner, out of bounds, and that's it! She tipped the entry, but enough time ticks away, and Baylor is the national champion, 82-81, a thriller over Notre Dame in Tampa.
Oh, what a weekend it was. Yes, indeed. Welcome. Shout out Baylor Bears, Kim Mulkey, Louisiana native with a couple of Louisiana ties in their lineup. Get the national championship game won. And tonight's national championship, Virginia and Texas Tech, two teams that do what they do better than anybody else could even imagine doing it. They get after you and they play defense. And they've just got enough firepower on the offensive end. I think it is an absolutely intriguing matchup. No, it's not the sexiest. It's not going to be North Carolina Duke running up and down the floor, putting up 90 points on the board. But it's still going to be beautiful in and of itself. Cannot wait. Cannot wait. And with that, we say good afternoon. How are you? Man, after that rain came rumbling in, whew. We need some drying time, right? We need some drying time. But baseball got all their games in after losing the opener to Arkansas State on Friday, 12-6. The Raging Cajuns bounce back 14-5 in the first game of a Saturday double dip, and then 6-1 to win the series over Arkansas State. And now the Raging Cajuns are at they've hit the Mendoza line. They are 17-7 overall. They are 6-6 in conference play with a two-game winning streak. So it's that time of the year. And they welcome, they're at home a lot now. They've got Louisiana Tech coming into town for a Tuesday night matchup. They've got McNeese State coming to town for a Wednesday night matchup. And then another Friday, Saturday, Sunday with South Alabama coming to town. So 5 games this week. All 5 at Teague Moore Field at Russo Park. Meanwhile, LSU baseball. Pitching has turned around. They win the opener. Zach Hess was terrific. Terrific. A 2-1 win in the opener on Friday. They play a double dip. They lose the second game. This kid, AC, the left-hander from A&M, was just too good. Too good. But LSU behind Cole Henry wins the nightcap, and LSU wins the series 2 out of 3. Gymnastics advances to another NCAA success. And now they're back in the hunt for a national championship team. Spring football. We'll find out all about that. Let me tell you, we got so much to talk about and so much to do. And let me tell you what we have coming up on the program today. We'll head out to to Minneapolis, my good friend Mark Schlesinger, the head coach of the UNO Privateers. He's been to the dance before as a participant. Now he's part of all the over 2,000 college basketball coaches that are there to watch the Final Four and to talk and to mill around. And you see how Eric Musselman left Nevada. He's the new head coach at Arkansas. Tennessee might be losing Rick Barnes. UCLA is offering in reports of up to $5 million a year to try and get Rick Barnes away from Knoxville and out to Wooden World, Westwood, and the UCLA Bruins. So it's good to be Rick Barnes. What's Tennessee going to do? Here's the offer from UCLA. I love it here, but you got to at least match it, right? You got to match it. So we'll have Mark Schlesinger on and talk about – here's a coach that believes in defense, so he'll really break this thing down. Two teams that just make it difficult for you to shoot the basketball. They really do. They get right up into your body, and they play defense without fouling, and they've got some really good offensive players. And look, let's end it once and for all. Okay, I feel for Auburn. I really do. But that's a call that had to be made in the corner on Guy. You've got to be able to go up and come straight down. The Auburn player bumped him. Yeah, they missed. They missed the double dribble call. And no question about that. They missed other calls throughout the course of the game. But you got to give Guy credit. I mean, you talk about ice water. Down two at the free throw line, three free throws, knocks all of them down. I mean, and it hardly even touched the net. So give him some credit. Give him some credit. And give Texas Tech credit, too. Because, man, they're a good team. I think it's going to be a great – I think it's going to be an outstanding national championship matchup. And either way, we're going to have some team who's going to win their first college basketball championship. And that's good. That is good. I'm all for it. So, Mark Schless will join us. Spring football. Doug Morrow was there. He is on the course of college football season here on the LSU Sports Radio Network and 103.7 The Game, bringing you all the LSU football games. He was there, and we'll get his thoughts on what he saw with this glorified scrimmage. But still, you can still tell who the athletes are. You really can. And the only thing of a negative, you lose, and I don't know to what extent, but Badora Traore, offensive lineman, went down, and, you know, we haven't talked to Ed Orgeron. He hasn't said anything about it other than it didn't look good, quote. It didn't look good on the field. So that's the only it's the only negative. I hate injuries, but anyway, it's a part of the game. So we'll get the word from Doug Morrow. In conjunction with that, in hour number two, after Hot Topics, we'll talk with Mike Scarborough. LSU gets a commitment, one of the top linebackers in the country, out of the state of California. LSU's got 10 commitments to their 2020 class and three from La La Land. I get a little leery about it. That's a long way away from home, and it's a lot of time to think about it and change your mind. But, hey, we'll see. We'll get the latest on Mike Scarborough, and Brody Miller will recap from NOLA.com, the Times Picayune. He will recap the weekend that was for LSU baseball, who is now tied for first in the SEC West at 8-4, and just one game behind Georgia for the outright lead in the SEC. LSU with a game tomorrow at Southern University in Baton Rouge, and then they hit the road to take on those other Tigers in the league. They'll have a three-game set against Missouri. So a busy weekend of baseball to boot. So there you have it. All right? Let's take our first time out of the day. When we come back, we're heading out to Minneapolis, the land of 10,000 lakes. He's not on one of those lakes fishing. He's talking and getting ready for the national championship game. The head coach of the UNO Privateers, Mark Schlesinger, joins us next.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show. Live and local. 103.7 The Game.
Welcome back. It's National Championship Monday, and someone will be cutting down the nets for the first time in program history as Virginia and Texas Tech meet up. The last game of what I think has been a tremendous, tremendous tournament from start to finish. And I don't think tonight will be any exception. But let's go to an expert because he's got to be salivating. He's a defensive-oriented coach. He loves to coach up on that end of the floor. And you got to be thrilled to see two teams that probably do it better than anybody else in Virginia and Texas Tech. I'm talking about the head coach of the UNO Privateers, Mark Schlesinger. Coach Schless, how are you, buddy?
Doing great. How you been?
I'm terrific. You got to like these two teams, wow, right? Defensively, unbelievable.
It's amazing that they've done a tremendous job just doing the fundamentals. I think, you know, obviously we could get down into the incredible nuances of both of their man-to-man defenses where, you know, Texas Tech is a no-middle side, you know, push everything to the side, and Virginia is a pack line. I'm going to play the gaps and make you chuck it from outside. And they're different, but they're the same. They're just so incredibly fundamentally sound. Their coaches are very humble. Their personalities are not bigger than their teams and their programs. What a refreshing Final Four for not just fans, but a great motivational for all coaches across the country, regardless of level, that, hey, you work hard, do the right things, you got shot.
I believe it. Texas Tech won in spite of what many people call the best player on the court. Jared Culver was basically ineffective for the first 38 minutes. And Virginia's Kyle Guy had three huge game-winning free throws, but he's been kind of up and down this tournament. So I guess the question is, which team can least afford a bad game from its top scorer?
I mean, you say he had three huge free throws. The kid's from Indiana, Jordan. He's a former Indiana Mr. Basketball. Was there any doubt in your mind that he was going to make all three?
No.
From another Indiana guy. I mean, there's no doubt whatsoever. I mean, he's the Terry Gill of Virginia basketball. I mean, just keep that in mind before we go any farther. I mean, but both of these guys, I mean, I think it showed the incredible depth of their team to be able for both of their best players to be up and down throughout of it, and it shows the strength of their team basketball. Both of them are playing just incredible team basketball, but I think one of those two guys is going to have to step up and really be special and be a difference maker in order for the game to go their way. You know, and I also think, you know, the guy that I think is the key will be the key tonight will be Moretti for Texas Tech. I just think I think if he can play at another level and in their system and what they're doing, if he can get loose and really make some things happen, I think it's going to be big for Texas Tech.
He's really good at the point guard position. Which team has the more difficult offense to defend?
You know, they're both motion-based. You know, Virginia runs a lot of blocker move where you'll see one guy anchored down on the low block, another guy on the pitch post on the elbow, where they're going to run cutters off of both and look to be advantageous where, you know, Texas Tech is a motion team. And, you know, everyone has always known motion is probably the hardest thing to guard because it's unpredictable. And it's based on what the defense gives you is what it's going to take. Both of them are going to be special. And, as crazy as it sounds and as simple as it sounds, just making shots. Anytime you play in that environment on an elevated floor in a big arena like that, depth perception, a lot of stuff comes into play. Just being able to make shots. And then, you know, obviously the health of Tariq Owens would be a big factor as well.
Yeah, I do believe teams will settle in. I always think the first part of the first games are the most difficult with getting used to shooting. But now they've got a game under their belt. They're feeling good about themselves. They've had more time to practice in the arena. So I don't think that's going to be as big of an issue myself. But, you know, you got to be able to rebound the basketball. You got to get some cheap buckets. Who's the better team at that aspect?
You know what's interesting? We talked a lot about this, a coaching friend of mine, and he believes 100% the team that has the most second chance points in this game will win, because both of them, very very few times does Virginia get to the offensive glass, just because they're so focused on defensive transition. Mm-hmm. And then Texas Tech is the same. That's a big key for them. So the team that can get the most offensive rebound putbacks, that he feels, and I don't disagree with him, may be the single biggest factor in who wins this game, because that may be the easiest points to score all day. Their best offense is maybe just offensive rebounding tonight.
I'm with you. I'm with you, man. They get after you.
And that's a compliment to the defense, how good both of them are defensively.
You ever been involved in a game quite like Virginia and Auburn down the stretch like that in your long tenured coaching career?
Boy, I tell you, it was amazing. It had everything that you would want. The only thing that it didn't get was overtime. And I was texting with the legendary Danny Broussard, a guy that's on track to be the winningest high school coach in state history. And he was praying for overtime. He said, in fact, the only thing that could make this game better was overtime. And I can't say that I disagreed with it. It had everything, down from controversial calls to made threes, dynamic plays, a blown 10-point lead. Yeah. It was amazing. What a great game. And the game last night, too, the women's game, was phenomenal as well. But you think about Virginia, they were in back-to-back. I don't know that they could have played the two better games between the Purdue game, which I thought was as good a basketball game as it was in the entire tournament. And then the Auburn game was phenomenal as well.
I'm with you completely. People don't understand that just because you're there, you're just lollygagging around. There's a lot that goes on at Final Four weekend. So for the coaches, why don't you explain to our audience what do you guys do while you're there?
Well, it's our coaches. It's our National Coaches Convention, the National Association of Basketball Coaches. So all the coaches from around the country converge on there, and within it is a lot of, obviously, within your association, you have your meetings and different things going with that, but, a lot of professional development. You've got clinics that are going on. Mm-hmm. You've got all entities of basketball from NBA groups that are in town all the way down to grassroots to AU to junior high school coaches. And, when you go in to check in line, there could be the junior high coach from Lowbridge who's standing in line right behind Roy Williams waiting to check in, and both of them are members of the association. They're both waiting to get in. And so I think that part of it's kind of cool that, everyone is kind of on the same level for a time where everybody gets to visit and everybody's just ball coaches. And they're there and they kind of recharge and reconnect with friends they may not get to see during the year. And, a lot of people, it's such a competitive cutthroat business. And it gets more and more so every year, unfortunately, that people don't really take time and share ideas. And a good friend of mine is the coach at Central Arkansas, Russ Pinnell. And, he grew up coaching and was with Eddie Sutton and different things like that.
Yeah.
And people think we're crazy. He and I meet for breakfast and lunch when we play each other. We exchange ideas. We talk about things that are working with each other's teams and things that they don't. And he talked all the time about, in his first years getting in when Coach Sutton would go, and they'd play somebody else, and they would sit, him and the other head coach would sit, and they'd have coffee and talk about, different things that were going on in each other's lives and coaching ideas. And I think that that's a pretty neat thing that's kind of lost a little bit in this modern age of technology when people talk less and communicate more.
Yeah. Mark Schlesinger, head coach of the Illinois Privateers. I'm just curious your thoughts, because those people that aren't involved in the game, all they think about, they read headlines and they think college basketball, it's a dirty, cheating game, and it's been that way forever. What are your thoughts on where the college game is here and now?
I think it's great. I think there's 353 Division I teams, and the majority of us do it the right way and really put student-athletes first. Get kids that want to be in school at the school that they're at, that want to be a part of their community. And there's some guys just like any business. I mean, you could take any business win, whether it's the guy that's trying to get the food contract, or there's the guy an offshore company that's trying to get a tugboat business, or you name it. There's going to be, every business is going to have people that are going to be unethical, that are not going to follow the rules, and that are not going to do the right things. The people that choose, and that's the operative word, they choose not to follow the rules, then you know what? They need to be held accountable. And for whatever way that is, everybody willfully signs up to be a part of what we're doing. And you choose to abide by the set of rules that are there, no different than playing the game of basketball. You're going to play by the set of rules that are there. Whether they're fair, unfair, that's not for me to judge. It's the governing body. And I think that it is very healthy. And I think that the tournament that you're seeing today in the Final Four teams that win there was a great representation.
I agree.
That it doesn't always have to be the premier five-star guys that win it. I don't think going into it anybody could have picked five guys out of that Final Four team. The common guy on the street could have gave you five players from all four teams combined. And so that's a neat part of this tournament that I think this has shown out to be why it may be one of the greatest sporting events in the world.
Well said, my friend. Well said. All right, I got to ask you, who you coaching tonight? Who's going to win this thing?
Boy, it's a coin flip, and I'm on both sides. I love Coach Bennett, and obviously he and his father. Growing up in the Midwest, people that I always looked up to and doing it the right way. His dad was a Division III guy, and I was lucky enough to play at a very good Division III school in Illinois. And so having a chance to meet him and just the most humble, easygoing guy, and obviously his wife's from Baton Rouge, so good local connection there. But and then Texas Tech are guys that I've known and grown up with kind of in this business, guys that have matriculated up, and I've had honest, real conversations with. So I'm pulling for both. I think Texas Tech has a little bit of the edge just because they're playing with such confidence and such swagger. And I just think that their foot speed in the end may be the thing that pushes them over the top a little bit. But you can't go wrong. Both are good coaches and good programs.
Man, I can't thank you enough. You're truly one of the good guys and an outstanding coach, and we wish you nothing but continued success. Go enjoy the last game of the year, Celeste, and thank you.
Thank you, Ron. Have a great day.
All right, buddy. You take care. Mark Schlesinger, UNO Privateer, was switching from the hardwood to the gridiron. Another legend, Doug Morrow, joins us next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and on the app. Time to talk Tigers with former All-American Doug Morrow. All rise! It's another edition of Jordy and the Judge.
Oh, yes. How about that in April? My cup runneth over. Absolutely. Well, the spring game has come and gone. Doug was there to witness the ball game, and so I got to pick his brain and find out what he learned from basically a glorified scrimmage. No quarterbacks are being tackled. There's no live kicking and pressuring and all that kind of stuff. But, Doug, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Hey, Jordy, how are you doing today?
I'm doing terrific, man. I greatly appreciate your time. So you've been to a lot of these things before. Anything in a nutshell you can tell me?
Yeah, this one was prettier than most of them. Yeah, okay. I mean, most spring games really are not very interesting because spring football itself, you know, is kind of a grind for the players. And this spring started with high expectations by the fans based upon a couple of things. One is the bowl win in the Fiesta Bowl against Central Florida.
Right.
And the other is a great recruiting class. There's a third component that I don't think has been talked about enough, but I think it's very important, and it was very evident in the spring game, and it was very evident towards the end of last football season. And that is the young players that were forced into play last season because of injuries, because of vacancies and positions, those players have grown up, and they grew up in the end of last season. They grew up in the bowl game, and they have grown up during spring football. So all of a sudden, you have some players that were potentially stars who, in fact, now are stars. And that made the spring game really more interesting than most of them.
Give me a for instance. Give me a for instance on that, Doug. Players that had to grow up quickly and have continued to emerge.
Well, you know, players like Jamar Chase. Jamar Chase ended up last season with the last three or four games, all of a sudden he came kind of from nowhere. He was a very highly recruited receiver. But it takes a while to get used to playing in the SEC level of football. So all of a sudden he became a real contributor on offense, and he continued to do that in the spring game. Justin Jefferson continues to improve. Terrace Marshall continues to improve. Joe Burrow, who wasn't even here for the spring last year, although it seems that he was been here forever.
Yes.
But he was not even here for the spring last year. So everything that he did in developing as a quarterback, he had to do during the summer and then during the fall camp and then as the season went on. And he proved to be a real tough guy, a real capable quarterback, and he's done nothing but improve. And then when you put Miles Brennan, the backup quarterback who ended up redshirting last year, you put him in the mix, he's grown up. He's gained about 15, 20 pounds. He was real, real, real slender. And he's not that anymore. He is a strong young man, has always had a great arm, has always had a great mind. So he and Joe Burrow make a great combination when you couple that with the new LSU offense, you know, the one that they've been talking about. It's the the RPO offense, and very few people ever talk about, well, what does RPO mean? And, you know, what it means is run, pass, option, and it's kind of shorthand for the concept that if you put the defense in a position where they have to commit how they're going to defend a play before you, the offense, have to commit as to what play you actually are going to run. In other words, LSU runs out of the shotgun, snap goes to the quarterback, and every play in the minds of the offensive linemen from tackle to tackle, every play is a running play. And so they're going to block it as a run, but it may be a pass, depending upon how the defense responds to it. That's based upon a quarterback's ability to make that read. And that's what LSU's been working on a lot, and the New Orleans Saints do that very well. So they got one of their coaches, Joe Brady, young guy, 28 years old, came in, and he's been a big hit on the coaching staff. And he has helped install, along with Steve Ensminger, this RPO offense. They did not show that much of it during the spring game, but they showed enough of it, and they showed enough of the formations with five wide receivers, kind of a wide-open passing game that also opens up the running game. They showed enough with the people sitting in the stands. We're excited. They had a great time watching it. It was fun to watch. They anticipated wanting to see more, and, of course, coaches weren't going to show them more.
Right.
But they showed them enough where they look back at last year and they say, you know, what we got this spring looks better than what we had during the season last year. And normally the offense doesn't look better in the spring.
True.
Normally it's the defense that has the advantage. Now, one of the things is this defense, look, because there's some injuries. And so there are a lot of defensive players who didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
But that gave the opportunity, for example, young guys, Apu Aika, nose tackle, and Tyler Shelvin, who has lost a bunch of weight and become a much better nose tackle. This is the first time LSU's had two big guys, I mean big guys, 355, 360 pounds in that range, who are quick, have good quickness sideways, who clog up the middle in that 3-4 defense. That's a great advantage LSU has not had, and it makes those inside linebackers much more effective, and they will be.
Yeah. Derek Stingley's the kid everybody's raving about, the defensive back from the Dunham School. What was your synopsis of him? It's hard to see in a glorified scrimmage, but you can tell the athletes and their skill set no matter what the environment is.
He is all advertised. In fact, he's more than that, I think. He's got great size for a cornerback. Now, he is a high school senior. You understand?
Yeah. So 17 years
old.
He's
a high school senior right now, 17 years old. He steps in there. He looks like an NFL player. He makes great plays. He made several great plays, made a great interception. I think Jamar Chase was the intended receiver on a play, or maybe Terrace Marshall, a pretty well-thrown pass by Joe Burrow. And Stingley played it perfectly, went up, took the ball away from the receiver who was just getting ready to catch it. Another play, he did the same thing, forcing a receiver who was going to catch a touchdown pass, forcing him out of bounds as he came down with the reception to keep it from being a touchdown. He had many other plays, but he is outstanding, and he is a guy who's going to step in, and he's going to be more than a replacement for Greedy Williams, and that's hard to say. So, you know, he's going to be the new LSU-DBU poster boy, and that's great for LSU's secondary.
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to have good play at the inside linebacker. So although you can't replace a Devin White, they're going to have guys who can do a pretty good job of filling in for it. So it's a lot of things that are exciting about it that you normally don't see in a spring game, but they were on display this time.
Doug Morrow, kind enough to join us. He is up in the booth yet again, he and Chris Blair. For football seasons throughout the course of the years. Look, to beat Alabama, you got to be, you mentioned Apu Aika and Tyler Shelvin. You got to be big up front. You got to control the line of scrimmage. That offensive line is concerning to me. Did you see any nucleus there? I know some people are hurt, and you're waiting on some newcomers to come in. What was your assessment of the offensive line?
The assessment was good, and the reason is because with the offense, with the concept behind this offense, the quarterback's getting the ball out of his hands.
Yeah.
Immediately. So the offensive line, even if it has deficiencies, they don't have to hold their blocks very long. And every play to them is a running play, so it's not like they become confused, and it's not like they have to block somebody for very long, because so much of it relies upon the five wide receivers and the quarterback getting rid of the football quickly. And that opens up some running that, you know, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who is a kind of a, became a workman-like back. He's not a Leonard Fournette.
Right.
Leonard Fournette is not a Leonard Fournette,
although
his brother. But both of them have unique skills that fit perfectly in this offense. Both good receivers out of the backfield, both good pass blockers, good enough runners downfield, and particularly when you have big gaps in the secondary of the defense, when you break in the secondary, you're going to have a chance to make a big gainer out of it. So all of these players and the offensive line, again, has people who were young guys or injured last year, who now are a year older and they've matured a lot, and all of a sudden you have a pretty good offensive line that you weren't sure you were going to have, and you have some depth there. So, again, you know, we anticipate all these things, and you realize you're playing against yourself. So, you know, the way the offensive line looks, it might be that it looks better than it really is going to be because the defense is not that good. I don't think that that's true, although a lot of the defensive front didn't play in this game because of injury. I think that both sides, LSU is going to be much better than last year, and in the skill spots, they're going to be better all across the field, both defensively and offensively.
Boy, that is good to hear. Doug Morrow, kind enough to join us. Have you had a chance to meet and talk to Joe Brady at all this year, the kid, the coach that came over from the Saints after he's sitting there learning from
the kid, George. You're a kid
too.
To me.
But obviously, he's had an impact on this team.
Yeah, no, I have not, but I've done some reading about him, and he gave a talk which kind of sold the LSU coaching staff on him about RPOs and about what the Saints have done with it. And look, anytime you have a coach that can come in and he can make your quarterback look kind of like Drew Brees, that guy is a pretty good coach. And that's kind of what he's done. He's helped make Joe Burrow a better quarterback, and Burrow has advanced a lot during the season last year. He's made Miles Brennan a much better quarterback. And the reason is he's given them a chance to get rid of the football quickly instead of having to run for their life, as it happened last year. Of course, towards the end of this spring game, there were some quarterback sacks or a lot of pressures. Now, it was easy to get a sack because once you got within a yard of the quarterback, the officials ruled it a sack. Mm-hmm. They didn't want the quarterback to get tackled or hurt, which is a good call. But so there were probably more called sacks than would really take place during a game. But even then, LSU's quarterbacks looked far superior to what they did as a group last year.
It looked like they only had one. I hate spring games for this reason. An injury to one of the offensive linemen, Taore. I hope he's okay. I haven't heard any word about him.
I haven't either, and it looked like it might be something that might have some seriousness to it. Although he ended up walking off the field on his own, but he was limping. And look, anytime that happens, and he was down on the ground for a while, so you never know what happens. But it's a tough game, and there are going to be people who get hurt. Yeah. What you need to do is have enough people to where the next guy can step up. And there won't be any loss in performance. And I think LSU demonstrated that.
Doug, I can't thank you enough for your time. You've been to a lot of these things. So after all this, are you still chomping at the bit, looking forward to another football season because you think there's a lot of talent on the field?
Well, you know, I think so too. But I always remind myself that all those other schools, the other 13 in the conference, they got coaching staffs, they recruit. They've got really good players. They got big stadiums. They got fan bases that are rabid. So there are going to be a lot of good teams in the conference, as they always are. And you've got to beat those teams. Like Coach Bill Arnsberger used to say, it's a lot easier when you're playing against air. Yeah. And we don't have any air games on the schedule this year.
No.
All going to be somebody that has good players and good coaches.
All right. Well, Doug, thank you very much. And we'll see. Now it's time. You can't win a championship at this time of the year, but you can sure lose one by your approach, how hard you work, how you hit the weights, how you get in shape. Those that need to gain weight need to gain weight. Those that need to lose weight need to lose weight. So you can't win a championship, but you can surely lose one right now. And I'm sure that they'll have their these players all ready to roll and go from there. But thank you for your time as always, man. It's always great catching up with you.
Jordy, it's always great talking to you. Hope you have a great day.
Thank you, my friend. That's Doug Morrow, once again, in the booth for LSU football on the LSU Sports Radio Network and right here on 103.7 The Game. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back with more here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
There's only one place you'll find all of the movers, the shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helfer Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. 52 minutes and some change after the hour as we wrap up hour number one. We've got hot topics coming up in hour two. LSU recruiting news with Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com, and LSU baseball recap and set the stage for this weekend. Four games all on the road, one in Baton Rouge at Southern, and then the Tigers head to Missouri. And then we'll close things out with a couple of history lessons and birthday wishes. But amongst all the things that took place this weekend, only one really significantly had a lot of teeth to it, and that was LSU gymnastics. They were started their NCAA tournament run, and they got it done. Once again, scoring a 197.50 to advance to the next round of the tournament. And in their pursuit of their first national title will begin as the rotations were released today. And LSU will face off, the number three-ranked Tigers will face off against the reigning national champion UCLA Bruins, seventh-seeded Michigan, and sixth-seeded Utah in the first session at noon our time on Friday, April the 19th. Four teams in the second session are number one-ranked Oklahoma, number five, Denver, number eight, Georgia, and number 13, Oregon State. So LSU's in the first rotation. The top two teams from each semifinal will advance to the first four on the floor, they call it. Before this year, the final day of the competition usually consisted of six teams rather than four in what was known as the Super Six. But, you know, they only have four rotations. You got six teams, so that means two teams are sitting out. This just makes much, much, much better sense. So the team title will be determined on Saturday, April the 20th. LSU's never won a team national gymnastics title, ever. Now, they finished second twice, in 2016 and in 2017. And all the rotations were predetermined by random draw well before the season. LSU's going to begin the meet on beam before going to floor, vault, and closing on bars. It's the same order that LSU competed in during the Baton Rouge Regional Final on Saturday, and LSU scored that 197.50 competing in that order on Saturday. So LSU had the fourth highest score of the eight teams qualifying for the Nationals. Their highest score of the season, 198.175, would have been second highest overall, but the 197.5 that they did in the Baton Rouge Regional was the fourth highest score. So you can see what the competition is going to be like. So get ready. They've got some time to heal up, get everybody well from the flu, and get ready to go. Boy, if anybody deserves one. I mean, Didi Bro's been there for 41 years. 41 years. Man, if ever there was a time, ever there was a time. And oh by the way, no word on Will Wade, no word on a purported meeting, but now Duke University is looking into the allegations brought about that Nike has paid Zion Williamson's mother all this money for him to go to Duke. They're investigating, which means they're really not. They're really not. Some programs are just bigger than the entire entity, and that's what Duke is. But I'm glad they're not in the national championship game. I'm glad who's there, Texas Tech and Virginia. I promise you, neither one of them cheat. I promise. They just do it the old-fashioned way. They just work hard, and they D you up. Yes, indeed. All right, hour number one's in the books. Coming up, hour number two. We got a lot to get to, and we'll make our predictions as well as to who's going to win the whole shooting match. Well, I'll tell you right now. No, I won't. But I know where I'd rather be tonight, and I'll tell you that as we start hour number two next.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle!
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out
and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go. Hope you're having a fabulous Monday, the 8th day of April. My main man, CD, back in the 237 Roof Studios. He's stirring the drink, making sure everything running smoothly, and it's great to be with you. National Championship Monday night, Virginia, Texas Tech. But I got to tell you, I'd rather be at Minute Maid Park. I'd rather be watching the Yankees and the Stros in person. What a ball game. Packed. Oh, can't wait. Cannot wait. What a night. Yes, indeed. All right, without further ado, we've got a busy second hour, so let's not waste any time. Let's get right into it. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, hit that button, baby.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious. Decidedly better.
Glenn, I'm firing up the citation. I'll be in Lafayette at about 4:30. And about 4:30, and then we'll caravan and fly it all the way to Houston. What do you think? You ready?
That sounds like a plan, Jordy. We just got to figure out what we're going to wind up doing with them. Bumper to Bumper Sports coming up in about an hour from now.
They won't mind. They won't mind. Let's go. Ball game, bam. Game time. Let's go.
That sounds like a plan, Jordy. But we got to talk about what happened over the weekend, and we got to start things off with the LSU spring game. Trust me, Jordy, there was a lot of things surrounding it that was hyped up about it. Obviously, Derek Stingley Jr., he was hyped up. I know it's spring practice, but did he live up to that hype around him based off of what you saw on Saturday?
I cannot lie to you. I was at a volleyball tournament all day Saturday for my daughter.
Riveting.
So, yeah, it was. They were winners. They won the whole dadgum thing. But, you know, I talked to Doug Morrow earlier in the show, and I trust Doug, and he said he's all that and then some. So, wonderful. That's great. Now, let's see when it counts. And look, I don't get anything out of spring games. Never have, and never, ever, ever will. So I just have to wait and see when it counts. So hopefully he is. I'm just glad it's over with. I feel bad for Bedore Traore, who got hurt. I don't know to what extent. But other than that, let's just get to fall. That's all.
Exactly. Get to fall. Get to when it matters the most. But, man, it was just, like I said, he looked outstanding, especially a big interception that he had. He was fighting for that one. It was amazing to see what he's able to do right out the gate. Stingley definitely caught my attention. That's for damn sure.
All right.
But, you know.
Ooh, a strong note from CD.
How can you not put a strong note on that one?
They told me that, and again, take it with a grain of salt, because he's not going up against Alabama and Georgia and their offensive line, but Puika apparently has impressed a lot of people. But again, that's not the first team offensive line. That's not Alabama. That's not Texas. So you have to always consider things and take it for face value. But hey, there's a lot of talent on the field. Now we'll see if they can beat other very talented teams.
Oh, of course, Jordy. There's a lot of talent around it. All you got to wind up doing here is it's pretty simple. Win in the trenches, and if Apu can live up to that hype as we get closer to the regular season, and I'd say probably in that second game against what seems to be a really good Texas team, that could wind up looming large down the line, because that's where the SEC games are won, between the trenches. Yeah.
Ika's about, three-something. That's a lot of poo.
There we go, Jordy.
There you go. I thought I'd get a laugh out of you.
Oh, you know that would get a laugh out of most everybody. I think everybody listening right now, wherever they are, they're just killing themselves laughing at that one.
They're chuckling.
Oh, that's a good one.
A lot of poo, baby. That's
indeed.
A lot of poo. Yep. All right.
All right, Jordy. Next up, we got to talk about the Final Four. And, of course, the biggest topic out of all of them has to be the Auburn foul, the missed double dribble call. What was the more controversial ending, Jordy? That game, or what we saw in the Mercedes-Benz Superdome back in late January?
Well, no, the Mercedes-Benz Superdome was the worst of all time. Look, the Auburn guy fouled him at the end. I mean, it really did. Now, they did miss the double dribble call. No question about that. But how do you leave that guy open? I mean, he's the guy on the other, in the exact opposite corner just a few seconds ago, hit the crucial three to get you back in the game. I just didn't understand how they didn't defend him better. But shooters got to be able to come up straight, go up straight, and come down straight. And if you impede that, it's a foul. So they made the right call. They missed the double dribble. Yes. Yes. But he still, hey, give the guy credit, the guy. Talk about pressure, free throws. Are you kidding me? Knocked down all three of them, and the net never moved. Yeah, it's just tremendous clutch play.
Yeah, Kyle Guy definitely went all out, and I'm definitely trying to find his wedding registry right now to hook him up with something really nice, because that was just a phenomenal performance. Ice water in the kids' veins,
absolutely.
Jordy.
Clutch.
Moving over to LSU baseball, of course, the big story, Josh Smith. He wanted to be named SEC Player of the Week for his phenomenal weekend against Texas A&M.
Yeah.
But, of course, I think something a lot of people aren't talking about is Zach Hess. He looked pretty darn good last Friday. Is he starting to find his groove again?
I hope so. I mean, it's like old Forrest Gump said, box of chocolates. You don't know what you're going to get. But when he's good, he's real good. Now look, six innings, he did five. But this Cole Henry dude gave you eight to win the series on Saturday night. I mean, that's something else, man. So, you keep winning two out of three.
Yeah.
That's the key. So, weekend well done as well for the Raging Cajuns winning two out of three.
Oh, it was phenomenal seeing them win, especially after what happened on Friday night. A long night. They wound up having a really tough loss. Bounced back in a big way offensively. But I think the bigger story coming out of that one is Brandon Young on about 45-minute notice, Jordy, throws a absolute gem. I think he went seven innings, 13 strikeouts.
Wow.
That was one of the most thorough performances I've seen from a Cajun pitcher in a while.
I never got the why such short notice?
Jack Burke was sick.
Oh.
He was originally slated for the third game of the series, but wound up being sick. And also add the fact probably a doubleheader wound up changing some things, because I think he could have been ready to go if they had wound up playing on Sunday, but of course the weather had other plans.
Last
one here, Jordy. Anonymous NBA survey has come out, and apparently the players aren't necessarily big fans of Russell Westbrook and Draymond Green, saying that they're the most overrated players in the league. Is that
ridiculous? That's just hatred. That's ridiculous. Russell Westbrook's averaged a triple-double for three consecutive years. That's ridiculous.
I mean,
no, he's underrated. And all my boy Draymond Green does is win. I know he just does all the little things. He's a perfect piece to the Golden State puzzle. So that's crazy.
If anybody should be overrated, Jordy, how can it not be James Harden, the man that takes 100 shots a game?
Yeah.
And
dribble, dribble, dribble.
Shot. Shoot.
I agree with you, but wait, what's the most important thing? I can't believe WrestleMania. You didn't touch on it.
Oh my God, Jordy!
I can't believe it.
I don't have enough time to talk about WrestleMania last night, Jordy. Possibly one of the greatest ever, WrestleMania 35 last night. My goodness, Jordy, we saw Kofi Kingston do the unthinkable, get the win as he's your new WWE champion. Brock Lesnar's done. Seth Rollins slayed the Beast, but of course, the man, Becky Lynch.
How about
beat
her?
Ronda Rousey. It was controversial, but there's more to the story than that, Jordy.
Ooh. And now rematch.
She is like Conor McGregor. All the belts. She has all of them.
All of them.
See? It is amazing, Jordy. Like I said, I don't have time to really dive into it, but trust me, 20x20 Programs Podcast will have you covered.
CD, if I could get you that enthusiastic about everything else.
Everything's awesome, Jordy.
My God, we'd be off the charts.
Through the roof.
This WrestleMania stuff. I love it. There you go. There's your hot topics brought to you by the best hot sauce on the planet. And again, that's a lot of poo out there at WrestleMania. A poo-ica, he's something. WrestleMania, Cajun Chef, best hot sauce around. Bring a small bottle with you wherever you go. Everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. A new commitment to LSU football. We'll learn about it.
Taking the hottest topics and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station. 103.7 The Game.
right, we welcome you back. Earlier in the program, we talked with our good friend Doug Morrow about the spring game, but there's more to the spring game than that little scrimmage that's going on the field. It's all those people standing around the perimeter of the field, and those are recruits. So I said, let me call my main man, Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com, and get his thoughts on who was there and what their impressions were. Mike, good afternoon, my friend. How are you?
Hey, doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, thank you for your time and your expertise. I see where LSU got a commitment. Another kid from California. Always take that with a grain of salt. But tell me about Jaden Navarette.
Well, look, you're talking about you know, one of the very best athletes that's out there nationwide that LSU is coveted for a while. Hmm. Certainly, like you said, being out in California, you kind of are looking at it and wondering, you know, how secure is that?
Right.
But when you look at the trend of California prospects that have been getting pilfered, you know, not just at Oregon, but at other SEC schools and more, folks at USC and UCLA have to wonder, you know, what they can do to stem the tide. But you're talking about a 6'3", 235-pound outside linebacker, defensive end, you know, high four-star rating, a national 100 type of prospect.
Wow.
And he's one that they did pinpointed. Certainly the Elias Ricks Pied Piper, you know, routine is a part of it with the influx of other California kids noticing. But it's really telling when it's not just the kids from California that are coming for official visits, the fact that they're making their way to Baton Rouge on their own dime.
Wow, that's so amazing. Yeah.
You know, that's very telling. It's one thing for a kid to do an interview with a guy like me from California and saying he's interested in LSU and he likes an offer he's gotten. But is he coming on his own dime? Is he going to come back for camp? You know, and some of these kids, too, you know, Elias Ricks has Louisiana family. So there's other ways to get it done.
Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. 10 commitments for the 2020 class already, and 3 of those 10 are from the state of California. So that would be great. You got one from Maryland, not many from the state of Louisiana as of here and now. Did you anticipate any more commitments after the spring game or not?
Yeah, you know, I mean, there's going to be. You've got the spring evaluation period coming up.
Okay.
You know, but then you're going to get to a point where you're going to hit a certain number in the teens of commitments where then the rest of your focus kids are the type of kids they're going to want to make an announcement on signing day, or
right,
they're agreeing to make an announcement at an all-star game, you know, the first week in January, those type of scenarios. So then you get to a point where it starts to become 2021 kids that start to be the ones that drop in more regularity. But you have to like where LSU's class the way it looks right now. But still, you know, a big focus in my mind is offensive line and particularly tackles. They need to get that position with at least 4 offensive tackles. The roster is absolutely loaded down with guards, but okay, they need to get offensive tackles in this class. They had Marcus Dumervil in this past weekend. I'm talking to an interview back and forth with Martinez from Fort Lauderdale. You know, they're under the gun to get some offensive linemen in this class. So okay, you're never going to have a problem with athletes at LSU. But, you know, and look, Ed Orgeron's been saying it. You've got to have you got to have a big group of offensive and defensive linemen in this class. And Martinez was supposed to come. He's rescheduled his visit from St. Thomas Aquinas. The Dumervil kid was in this weekend for an official visit, had a great one from St. Thomas Aquinas in Fort Lauderdale. So those are some of the offensive linemen that were there.
It just seems to me, more so than ever before, LSU's going all over the place, even more so than before. You're talking about Fort Lauderdale. That's a hike to Baton Rouge. You got Baltimore, Maryland. That's a hike. You've got California. That's a hike and a half. So they're not afraid to go out after the best players. I mean, I love the attitude. I hope it all works. I hope these commitments are firm, and I hope they're honest.
Well, yeah, and look, you know, if you remember, it's on one hand, you there was a stretch, you know, 20 years ago where you said when LSU gets in trouble with their football program is when your recruiting classes are not at least a little over 70% Louisiana kids.
Right, right.
You know, that's what happened with Mike Archer. The grass was greener out of state, loaded up on a bunch of kids in Texas that didn't pan out, and that's when you get in trouble. LSU's, I can try to remember the number, but we did a survey, went back and looked at it, and LSU was most successful when I want to say it was like 73% Louisiana. But when you start running into problems at particular positions where the state's not producing, like offensive tackles, you got one kid, one prospect for 2020 in the state of Louisiana with an offer, Cedric Van Pran from New Orleans, you know, but he's a guard, so or can play center. So when you need, you know, at least four offensive tackles, true tackles in this class, you've got to go out of state. But this year, defensive lineman is abundant in Louisiana with Roy, Jacoby and Guillory, mm-hmm. Jalen Lee, and a couple others that don't have offers that are still very good players. So I think it depends on the year.
Gotcha.
But look, when you go to California and get an Elias Ricks, which is the 2020 version of a Derek Stingley, and the DBU keeps doing what it's doing, that continues to be a draw.
He is Mike Scarborough of TigerBait.com. You mentioned Stingley. Doug Morrow said he's all that and then some. But I love the fact that this Apu Ika is involved. It looks like now Dave Aranda's got two guys. Tyler Shelvin's lost some weight. He looks better. Ika's looks really good. Now you got two of those big, just block the holes and let your linebackers make play. Aranda hadn't had that before.
No, and Ika is going to push Shelvin, and you know, look, we know what happened on signing day. You know that immediately makes you forget about losing a Sobcher, and
yeah.
Alabama had kind of got, you know, backburned him, and I think they made a huge mistake. I think LSU absolutely that was a huge get in. I'm gonna be anxious to see how many plays, how many downs he plays as a true freshman. Because
Sobcher, okay,
yeah. I mean, what we're hearing from the closed scrimmages, of course, media can't attend, was that he was unblockable, and you saw some of that on Saturday.
Uh-huh. Wow. That's
having
awesome.
Having to take him out of practices, get him out of there, just so the offense could run some plays and not get disrupted.
Well, that's I'm sure Dave Aranda is thrilled by that. But Stingley, you got to see him again. No surprises to you?
Nah, he's special. Just, you know, you get him back there in punt returns. You know, I know Miles was adverse to it. I don't know if Orgeron's going to be, but it was good to see him out there fielding them. You know, Miles was notorious for not wanting, you know, true freshmen back there fielding punts, but he's a cut above. And that was one thing that was missing on special teams, which was so superb last season, was return yardage. So if he's going to be secure in fielding punts and there's no bobbles, you know, he's a game breaker. I was at two of his games where he broke him for touchdowns right in front of me. So mm-hmm. last season it done him. So he's the real deal. And I mean, he had one practice before they went for the bowl game, and Orgeron said he would have started in the bowl game if he would have had him available.
Yeah. Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com. Is there an area of concern for this year's team? It seems like offensive line might be the one.
Yeah, offensive line. That's the biggest. You know, there's a lot of reason to be excited about the LSU offense and the RPO and Coach Brady and the receivers and the what we're hearing about Ja'Marr Chase ready to get to the next level. But that offensive line could be an issue. But it sure seems that they're a lot more optimistic about Ed Ingram being reinstated at some point here in the offseason. So if you get him back, that helps you. But again, you're still looking for solutions at tackle. Are they going to have the right scenario there? And again, that'll be a position where you can ill afford to have any guys nicked up or that have to miss any time.
All right, so Jaden Navarette is another good one, 6'3", 235, one of those pass rushing specialists. I'm reading where he turned down offers from USC, Oregon, Michigan, Nebraska, and Tennessee, just to name a few. That tells me that's all I need to know. If the big boys are after you, it's okay.
Yeah, and look, it's I think the LSU coaching staff and the recruiting folks in the building are really doing a fantastic job. They're getting these kids in. They're getting them out to sample Louisiana food. They're having crawfish boils after scrimmages where they're able to attend and pay to be a part of it. And I think that's all feeding into this. So, and it didn't help. It didn't hurt on Saturday that you had some absolutely great weather. So, even though it was a small crowd, the kids that I talked to yesterday just absolutely loved the stadium. So. It seems to be all clicking for Ed Orgeron in the program right now.
Is Mike Scarborough, TigerBait.com, for everything you want to know about LSU and every sport out there. What a weekend it was. My goodness gracious. Y'all were on top of all of it. As always, we greatly appreciate your time, my friend. And when something breaks, let us know.
All right, Jordy. Thanks for having me. Talk soon.
All right, you got it. TigerBait.com. We'll take a timeout. LSU baseball wins 2 out of 3. We'll get the recap from Brody Miller, NOLA.com, the Times-Picayune, rolling on the Jordy Helfrich Show. Stay with us.
Never play cards with a guy whose last name is a state. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Helfrich Show. Live and local, 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, brought to you by Hooters. Hooters just makes you happy, and LSU baseball fans are happy. LSU wins another weekend series. They're now 8-4 in the SEC after posting a 2-1 series win last weekend over 9th-ranked Texas A&M. The Tigers are tied with Arkansas and Ole Miss for first place in the SEC West, and the Tigers just one game behind Georgia in the overall league standings. Brody Miller was there for every pitch and every hit and every out, and he's going to join us now to tell us what's going on. So, Brody, look, they played the number 5 team, Georgia, number 2 team, Mississippi State, the number 9th-ranked Texas A&M. They won 5 of the 9 games, and they posted series wins over State and A&M. So the sky is not falling on LSU baseball. What's turned around for the Tigers of late?
Well, I mean, I guess obviously things start with just the offense picking up a good bit after, you know, just a really rough stretch. I think, I think your Josh Smith, your Zach Watt, and honestly, the craziest thing of all is that this offense had a pretty decent weekend without Daniel Cabrera in the lineup. So
That
part, and without Matt's right-handed hitting besides Watson. So, yeah, that really can't be understated. But the honest truth is they're just, like, finding ways to patch all these wins despite all these problems. And, you know, I mean, they haven't looked necessarily, you know, overtly convincing these last 2 weeks, but that's the impressive part is that, you know, they're optimistic they're going to get all these injured guys back. The Daniel Cabreras, the Landon Marceau is expected to pitch tomorrow. Jaden Hill should be back soon, and possibly Chase Costello and Nick Castores. You know, they're finding ways to win these games without all these guys. So, I mean, the sky is definitely, I mean, the future could be bright for this team, but I think the main thing is pretty much two things. Yeah, guys like Josh Smith and Zach Watson having some big games, and the starting pitching just, I mean, pretty much looking fantastic. I mean, despite all of the injuries with these arms, they've been able to spare the bullpen game after game in these SEC series because Hess, Henry, Walker sometimes, they're going. six, seven, eight innings and just completely saving Palminteri's team.
To your point, we saw the good Zach Hess this weekend. Six innings pitched, gave up five hits, one run. It was earned. Kept his team in the game. LSU rallied for two runs, one in the seventh, one in the eighth. They get great bullpen work out of Vetmer and Fontenot. Boy, you couldn't ask for a better start. I mean, a 2-1 win over the Aggies. That was Hess again. Man, if he gets ahead in the count, he's tough to beat.
Yeah, I mean, and we're at the point where I think, you know, I, off the top of my head, I'm pretty sure, you know, five of his last six starts have been the good Zach Hess, so, or at least four of six. So at some point it might just be, you know, hey, maybe he's proven a lot of us wrong. But, yeah, I think it's always true with him. Like you said, if he gets ahead in counts, if he can repeat his mechanics, that's always a tough thing with him. If he can do that, I mean, he has great stuff, and he proved that against, you know, Texas A&M. He's proved that several times this season. And yeah, that Friday's win, you know, wasn't a great offensive performance by any means, but they faced, you know, two pretty good left-handed pitchers two really good left-handed pitchers those first two games, especially Saturday. But and you know, you talk to Palminteri and the guys after that game, and you ask them about the hitting on Friday night, and the weird thing was, you know, their hits early in the game were, like, really unconvincing, some lucky bloop singles, things like that. And then from, like, the fourth to seventh inning, they actually hit the ball pretty hard off those axes, but they were just going right at people. So then you're kind of trading off there about maybe that's kind of a wash. But, you know, when things matter, Josh Smith just hit an absolute bomb of a home run. And you know, when you have Zach Pest pitching like that, all you need is two runs.
Yeah, you're right. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, a time speak you and kind enough to join us. My goodness gracious, you mentioned Asa Lacy, the Saturday first game starter, six innings pitched. Now, only one walk, no runs, struck out 11 and walked four. Not that it means anything, but anything to why Eric Walker started the first game and not Cole Henry?
Yeah, there's actually, you know, it's funny. There is a real reason.
Okay.
You know, after Friday night's game, you know, Palminteri, you know, normally he would come out and talk to us right away and whatnot. He was kind of, you know, he was hanging in the locker room a bit. We thought maybe somebody was hurt. Then he runs over to Rob Childress, the A&M coach, and we're like, what is going on? And he says, hey, I'm flip-flopping. And we're like, can you tell us why? And he's like, I don't want to tell you why. But he he eventually told us that basically it comes down to, you know, Eric Walker's used to pitching in the day. That's part of it. But I think the real main reason, in my opinion, is they knew Lacy, and they knew that was going to be a tougher game to win no matter what. So with game three on the line under the lights, they liked the idea of Cole Henry being on the mound, the guy who, you know, you can make an argument has been their best pitcher this season. Maybe he probably has been. I mean, I think he wanted that guy under the lights, that even-keeled freshman. He's the guy they wanted to turn to when the series was on the line.
See, this is no knock on Eric Walker, but I love that philosophy. I've always said that. Man, let's go make sure if you're going up against a superstar, don't throw your superstar against him, man. Let's, you know, just take one on the chin and make sure you get the last one and win the series. And it turned out to be quite prophetic. LSU wins the last game 9-3, and Henry, to your point, was really, really good. I mean, he went eight innings, gave up six hits, two earned runs, struck out nine, and the all-important goose egg under the walk category.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually kind of forgot about the walk thing, but you're absolutely right. And yeah, he just every week he shows you kind of something more impressive about him. And I obviously I've been on your show kind of repeating myself, but we always knew he had really good stuff. What we didn't know, you know, when he was coming in, just because we hadn't seen it, not because we didn't think he could, but what we didn't know was just this guy's kind of a stone cold killer on the mound. I mean, I always go back to his first start at LSU ever against Southeastern on a midweek game, and he got torn up. They hit him hard. He lasted like two and two-thirds innings, and we ask him after the game what's going on, and he's just, just baseball, man. Not really, you know, he just was so not worried about it. You know, he was, like most freshmen are going to be rattled. Landon Marceau admittedly got rattled when he got hit. And Cole Henry's just like, yeah, man, things happen. I'll be fine next week. And that is what Palminteri loves about him, and he has been that every week. And this Saturday was maybe the best example. Series on the line, gives up two runs in the first inning on some weird plays. You know, this could have gotten out of hand really fast on a doubleheader, and he just dominates. And then, or even in the fourth and fifth innings, you know, he gets in some trouble the fourth and fifth innings, do some rough defensive play there. You know what? He gets out of both those jams with a double play and a strikeout, and looks amazing for three more innings. I mean, that guy is just turning into an all SEC kind of star.
Yeah, boy, that takes a lot of pressure off of you. We got those guys on the mound. But last week it was Chris Reed. This week it's junior shortstop, as you mentioned, Josh Smith. Back-to-back SEC Player of the Week award winner, Smith from Catholic High School. 6-for-12, batted 500 in the three games, a double, two homers, three ribbies, four runs scored. It just seems like every game there's a new hero, and I kind of like that. You're spreading it out. You're not relying on one guy, and you never know who it's going to come from yet, except it's not coming from the bottom of the lineup. But maybe, just maybe, right, that'll pick up a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and I guess for starters, like you were saying, I mean, it does seem like every game there's kind of one star, which is weird, I guess. But yeah, Josh Smith just had a heck of a season. He's been hitting .350 all year. But this weekend, this whole week, really, three homers. I mean, we started seeing some power from him for the first time, and you're seeing him just kind of make more impact plays as opposed to just being that guy who gets on every at bat. And the reasoning for that, I think, is the fact they moved him down to the two spot instead of leading off. You know, now he's in. I think, one, just the way he gets pitched to is going to be different there, and two, mm-hmm. he's in situations to drive, you know, your Antoine Duplantis is in, and I think that has really helped him, and he's admitted that. He's admitted that that's why his bat's been a little more powerful lately and more effective. But, yeah, then you have him, and you have Zach Watson, who had kind of off and on weekend, off and on week, and then just goes 4-for-5 with three RBIs on Saturday night. I mean, he saved that team through that game and kind of kept that offense going. And, you know, yeah, the bottom of the lineup is still a concern, but, I C.J. Willis had that great weekend, and he kind of fell off a little bit. And then, mm-hmm. But now it looks like Kay Belloso's figured some things out, right? So, you know, it's just kind of a lot of trading off. And I think the real key to this season, though, and still they don't have an answer for it yet, is just finding another good right-handed bat.
You're right. Is Antoine Duplantis confused? I mean, one day he's batting fourth, then he's batting third, then he's batting first, then he's back down to third. I mean, I know it probably doesn't mean a hill of beans to him, but it's got to be a little confusing sometimes, I would think.
Well, you know, you're absolutely right, but I wonder, and I would like to ask him about it, maybe I will today, is what's been interesting, though, is each time he's switched spots, he has played really well at that spot for a few games, and then it kind of reverts back. It's been weird, you know. They moved him to leadoff last weekend, or a week and a half ago, and you know, he looked really good for four games at the leadoff spot, and then he had a rough weekend. And then, you know, you have him at the three spot earlier in the year, and he goes for, what, 20 RBIs in 10 games or something, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like each spot they put him in, he has a quick run of success, then a quick struggle. So the answer through all of that is probably, like you said, it probably means nothing to him and just stuff happens.
Purdy Miller, NOLA.com, the Tom Spicchio. Must be a picnic of a week this week, just four games. I mean, last week was brutal. Oh, by the way, how was your weekend? So much going on. How did you handle all that?
Well, actually, I don't know if you saw it, but I actually just published a story where I didn't tell you this, but I went to every single, all nine sporting events from 9 a.m. to 11.
Wow.
I did kind of a running diary story where I kind of went through the whole day. So I did miss a little bit of the first game Saturday. But yeah, no, it was a bold idea, and my body hated me afterwards. But yeah, no, it was a tough day because you had to, you know, because obviously spring football is always going to matter most at LSU, just kind of how that works, that spring game. So you know, I had to focus on the spring game and then still have to run back and forth to get to baseball. And gymnastics was going on. Thank goodness for Amy just helping out with that. But, yeah, Saturday was one of the longer days I've had since I came down here, absolutely.
All right, now, what was the most exciting of all of them? Be honest.
That's a great question. That baseball series did turn out to be really exciting. So from a pure result point of view, that was the most exciting. But, I mean, I'm not afraid to say I was blown away by how cool beach volleyball was. I hadn't been to that brand-new beach volleyball stadium that just got. Yeah, I mean, that place was really cool, and I got to watch, you know, a good portion of a really good match with South Carolina. I mean, I do recommend people getting out there because I think this weekend is the last home weekend. But, I mean, it's a cool environment. It's like kind of like a minor league baseball feel to it with, like, a cool grass hill to hang out on. And, you know, like, players are, like, singing along to songs on the sideline. It's a cool environment. I do recommend that.
If we can just get a guy on a bicycle with a portable bar and serve some Mai Tais or some daiquiris, I'm all in.
I couldn't agree more, actually. That's the only thing it was missing.
I mean, it doesn't have to be affiliated with LSU. You can just kind of be walking around, kind of like the ice cream truck. You know, play the music and zoom. Everybody converges, and then he scatters. I think that would be terrific. All right, Missouri. What are they like in baseball? That LSU has a 3-game series in Mizzou in Columbia this weekend. Is what does Missouri bring to the table? Do you know?
Well, they got 3 left-handed starters for this weekend.
Oh, that's great.
That's not going to get any easier. And Paul Maneri's been kind of looking ahead to that challenge, you know, for about 3 weeks now. He's known that's coming. You know, Mizzou's had a really good year, which is, I mean, they were considered one of the worst teams in the SEC going into the season, but that has not been the case. I'm a little surprised they're not in the top 25, but, you know, they're right near the top of the SEC West. I mean, SEC East, just like, you know, LSU's ahead of the West. So, I mean, they're playing well. They've won some tough series. The series they lost, I think the only one they lost off the top of my head was Arkansas. But guess what? They held that Arkansas lineup, which is one of the best in baseball, to like 7 runs in 3 games. So, yeah, they're a tough team. I don't think they have the best offense in the SEC or anything like that, but that left-handed pitching staff could cause some serious problems.
LSU at Southern on Tuesday under the lights, and then it's a 3-game set. So every game away from the box this week, and Brody Miller will be traveling to all of them. All right, man, well, get some rest. You did the marathon on Saturday. Get some rest and recover, and get ready for the next series, man. So thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me. Have a great day.
All right, buddy, you too. Brody Miller, NOLA.com, The Times-Picayune. Brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson-Cecilia exit in Bro Bridge. Frankie, hey, he loves all sports. Loves baseball. Loves them all. Loves the Tigers, the Cajuns, the Saints. I'm not so sure he's high on the Pels right now. One more game left to go, and that debacle's history. But at D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, he comes to play every day. They've got everything you need for all your travel needs. Everything. And that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner, Ideal Cheeseburger. Oh, my gosh, it is so darn good. It's my go-to stop. Make it yours as well. D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon. We're back with more of the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Is back and better than ever as you are locked into the Jordy Helfrich Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the app.
All right, welcome back. Finishing touches of this Monday edition, Championship Monday. What a gig, right? I mean, you got the championship game tonight, and then CBS heads over to Augusta, and we've got the Masters weekend. Man, it is awesome. I'm of the belief it's going to be a good game. I really think it will be. I mean, this has been an incredible, incredible Final Four. Shout out, by the way, Kim Mulkey and the Baylor Bears, my good friend, with a lot of Louisiana players on that team, leads Baylor to an 82-81 win over Notre Dame to win her third national championship. I told LSU years ago, man, don't think short term. Think big picture, long term. Go hire Kim Mulkey. She will take women's basketball and make it a money earner. She'll fill the stands and she will win games. And that's exactly what she's doing at Baylor. I'd still go after her. I'm sorry, Nikki. It ain't happening. It's not happening on the women's side. It's just, it's in slumberland. Kim Mulkey can coach and she is a flat out winner. Go get her. You got the money. Go get her, because women's basketball at LSU is just, it's non-existent. Sorry. It is non-existent. And there she is, and she's getting P.J. Brown's daughter, Kalani Brown. P.J., the former Hornet, that's his daughter, right there, Slidell. She gets her to go to Baylor. Now, LSU doesn't get her. And you saw the grad transfer, just was the most valuable player of the Final Four, Jackson. Oh, well, anyway. She's there. Drives me crazy. All right, let's do our daily history lesson. We've got two of them today. April 8th was a special day, one worldwide and one locally. We go to April 8th, the year 1974. It was on the day that Hammer and Hank Aaron became the home run king. He surpassed Babe Ruth as the all-time home run leader with his 715th homer, this one coming at Fulton County Stadium in Atlanta. What a gentleman. And he did it the right way. Hammer and Hank Aaron. And then 2 years later, on a local note, April 8th, 1976, the New Orleans Saints selected Chuck Muncy and Tony Galbraith with their first and second round picks in the 1976 draft, the true first Thunder and Lightning. Muncy was so talented. Now, he had his issues, but he was so talented. And Galbraith, that's a Sean Payton kind of back. Tough, but can go outside and catch passes. What a dynamic duo on some bad, bad football teams. But Galbraith, Muncy, Thunder, Lightning, on this day, April 8, 1976. All right, birthday wishes. If today, April 8th, is your special day, man, happy from all of us here under the umbrella of Delta Media and 103.7 The Game, happy birthday. Hope you're having a great one. I really do. Hope you're having a great one. Let's see who you share it with. Happy 36th birthday to Triple G, Mr. Golovkin, 36 years old today. Still gorgeous, Robin Wright, happy 52nd birthday. And from the Dukes of Hazzard, happy 58th birthday to John Schneider. Oh, the good old boys. Yes, indeed. Happy birthday. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary to you and to yours. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. I don't know why they schedule volleyball games when there's a national championship game. I got two volleyball games and the title game. I can't let my daughters down, so I might miss the first 10 minutes of the game. But that's okay. That's okay. We can DVR it. Again, I'm going. Boy, it's going to be a tough one. I just think there's something in the water with UVA and Virginia. So I'm going to stick. I had them before the tournament started. I'm sticking with them. I got the Wahoos in a close one over Texas Tech. And there's a lot of people out there saying this is going to be a boring championship game. I beg to differ. I beg to differ. I think this is going to be a nail-biter all the way down to the wire. And I think it may surprise you a little bit. But we'll be back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m. We'll recap this one. We'll preview LSU versus Southern baseball. We're getting closer and closer to the NFL draft, and the NBA regular season is mercifully for the Pelicans coming to a close. They'll wrap things up with the Golden State Warriors at the Smoothie King Center. That ought to be really, really fun. Warriors have wrapped things up. The Pelicans don't have anybody on their team. They're all hurt. Anyway, it'll be boring, but that's okay. And much, much more. Much, much more. So come on back, same time, 2 to 4 p.m., same great station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. CD, you're the best. Thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening in, and honestly, we couldn't do it without our loyal and great partners. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. Enjoy the ball game tonight. Come on back tomorrow. We have only one Monday, April the 8th. Make it a great one. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.